So our first reader tonight, representing Smokeland Quarterly, is from Snoqualmie, I believe, is Len Kuntz. So give him a big hand.
Snohomish, actually, but
oh, I'm sorry.
Thanks for being here. I'm going to read four short pieces, totaling about 10 minutes. And I should preface this with, I've never written a happy ending, so I hope that's okay. This first piece was published in Cricut Online Review, and it's called The Sky, The Wide Open Sky. We live in a box with a secret that we are not normal. And inside this toaster, the air is always thick and ragged with cigarette smoke and sweat and sharp words and spike scares that scare me, even though I am older now and should be brave, unlike my nephew who came to play one weekend but got so frightened his eyelashes fell out. If I can help it, I don't talk to anyone, not even myself. But at night, there's a wide open sky, and sometimes it winks at me, and I think that it must be God. And maybe all that glittering is metal, because God actually wears braces, like Wendy Baker. And that image makes me smile inside, thinking of God as a gawky teenager, maybe even with acne, maybe not even getting hair down there quite yet. The other day, the television said all the cowboys had died. I don't know what expression I wore when I heard that news, but Mom's new boyfriend threw his boot at me and made my nose bleed. He said, "Not the real ones, you idiot." We're not supposed to go beyond the electric fence that encircles our gravel yard and boxy house, but each night I sneak out with a flashlight and a hand shovel. I dig and pile dirt, and every evening I get a little further. I take my sister with, but I know she'd rat me out, like she did the time I told her I enjoyed writing poetry. Then, in late summer, it happens. I poke through the other side. On the other side, the sky is the same sky as across the fence. There's not a thing different about it. Still, until now, I never noticed how, if you draw a line between them, the stars make up letters. And if I string the R with the U with the N, it tells me exactly what to do next. That was the first one. This one appeared in Nap magazine, and it's called Tiny. I am tiny, and I am large. The kids say, "Oh, hey, Tiny. Hi, Tiny." They no longer connect the nickname with a meaning. As they trundle on my bus with their overload of backpacks, one or two will high-five me, but no one stares. When I was their age, I had not yet become colossal. In high school, however, the ground started to shift. My father's girlfriends all looked like mother. Some wore white wigs and meringue lipstick. One time, a lady named Lottie said, "Here, see if you like this," and pushed my hand down her shirt. Dad thought it was my idea and punched me in the gut, said, "You pull another stunt like that, see if I don't kill you someday." After that, I made a moat of myself. It was too easy to eat. Hostess cherry pies, ho-hos, cakey snowballs with coconut frosting, Whoppers or Wendy's, it was all good. Kids at school claimed I looked like a seal, so they called me that. Afternoons, the boys would hold me down and say, "Seal, make that sound." Sometimes I wouldn't oblige, so they'd beat me, the same way Dad beat Mom until she left. Other times I'd relent and do it, ork, ork, ork. Even so, they tried to rip the blubber from my belly. And at night in bed, I'd inspect their fingernail scrapes, unable to distinguish most of them from my own stretch marks. Here, though, teachers, they don't seem to care about size. I have a special bus I drive, where the seat is set further back from the wheel so that I can scooch in and out without too much trouble. I keep a sack of double-stuffed Oreos by my left boot. I like the way the white icing makes my mouth clammy, reminding me of hiding under the blanket in hot air, having trouble breathing, thinking this is what it would feel like to be smothered, thinking, not so bad. Hi, Tiny. Merry Christmas, Tiny. My apartment is small. The table is small. The sofa, too. My bed is small. Once I brought a girl here, but she ended up robbing me before we'd even kissed. On TV, the parade starts at Macy's. The floats are packed with dancing puppets in the sky. A blow-up Hulk figure waddles against the wind. He keeps trying to tear loose from where he's tethered. Same as me, he's no good with crowds either. I hear the phone, but let it ring. Most of the time, I'll buy stuff from solicitors just to have someone to talk to, though that gets expensive. I stomp on a sack of Doritos, pour the orange dust in my mouth, and lick the crusty bits from the plastic bag. In the bathroom, I distract myself from looking in the mirror. I open the reflective cabinet and take out a box of blades. 5 inches of water is all the tub will take to overflow once I get inside. The water is warm or cold, doesn't matter. I tilt my head back, and I picture that balloon figurine in front of everyone, looming above the cheering children. I picture it floating away, rising, floating, light as air. Two more. This one was the winner of the Flash Fire 500-word contest. It's called Waterbed. When the fire burned down our garage, my sister could only ask about the waterbed. You can't burn a waterbed, can you? She asked, her goggle eyes big as pucks. She was mine alone to love, like a strange painting or the neighbor's lonesome dog. Our father was always away, and our mother, well, she didn't care much for retards. The man who interviewed me didn't work for the fire department, and I could tell he thought I was the culprit because he charged forth in hot pursuit of a motive. I could have given him plenty. The smell of fire gets on something, it bores in and can't ever really be removed. Rank skunk spray you can get rid of, but fire, it smolders in the fabric forever. Jeannie was my sister's name, but we changed it up, always with the letter J. Jezebel, Janine, Jackie, Junebug. She rather enjoyed the idea that she could become so many different people so easily. When my mother was at Mr. Taylor's house comparing bird-watching stories, Jeannie liked nothing more than to sneak up to my parents' bedroom and flop about on the waterbed. She became a mermaid on that thing, so happy. A queen being ferried betwixt regal landscapes, a damsel on a raft, a silly girl, not too smart, who at least knew how to swim for a moment. When our parents divorced, the first thing to go besides Pop was that waterbed. Mother stabbed it to death with a knife pick, and later the carpet man spent the better part of a day fixing things, flooring-wise. He even carried the rubber mat out of the garage like some defeated sea creature slung over his shoulders. But I buried it. It's a safe place now. Jeannie and I step over it every morning on our way to school. Me to mine and Jeannie to her special one. I tell her someday she'll swim again, and as she smiles, I think she believes me. Okay, and then this is the last piece. And this was in Jute. It's called The Launcher. That summer, we were bored or stoned when we could afford to be. It was Barry's brilliant notion to build the thing, but I didn't have any ideas of my own, so I went with his, which was the start of our trouble. It looked like a homemade bazooka made of plastic and duct tape because that's what it was, more or less. Do these things have a name, I asked. Barry said, hell if I know, what's it matter? So we called it the launcher and started off with spuds. Barry's mom had a 20-pound bag of them. They looked like aborted infants, only solid and heavy. They sailed into the sky, hung there for an astounding 30 seconds before landing in a violent splatter. It felt like discounted murder without any of the consequences. When we ran out of potatoes, we used every other vegetable we could find. Tomatoes, squash, zucchini, cabbage. We moved on to solids out of necessity. First it was soda cans, then it was soda bottles. The shattered glass sizzled, hissing at us like pissed off snakes. Looking back, I suppose those potatoes were something of a gateway drug because we got over them real quick, yet their minor thrill left us wanting more, a different fix that might kickstart some sedentary neuron in our brains. So we went to the pet store, and we bought 2 litters of mice, baby mice. I can still recall their furious scratching in the bag behind my car seat. Their breathing was husky. I found it fascinating that they never squealed, because in every mouse story I'd ever read, there was always a lot of squeaking or squealing. Barry's house was a dilapidated cabin that his grandfather had built 100 years ago or so. It leaned eastward toward the rising sun, and from a certain angle, you might have thought it had lost balance and was about to fall into the water. Chain Lake was no more than 2 blocks long and maybe almost 1 block wide. I never thought we'd hit the guy's house on the other side. If I'd believed we could, if Barry had, we would have tried first thing. As it happened, the third mouse landed on the old geezer's roof. It surprised me how dull and empty the resonance of death could be. Nothing but a thud and short skid sound. It depressed and disappointed me. I thought of my parents and wondered if they had gasped or screamed when that car hit them. We shot 2 mice at a time. I don't know what I expected. Perhaps I thought of my cartoon watching days and that they'd clasp their furry paws like a varmint couple desperate to enter the afterlife conjoined. But they just flew apart, and they landed apart. 2 separate thud and skid noises. Uncle Rory says things happen. It can be fate, or it can just be maybe God's busy. When I broke his windshield with a bat, he didn't seem such a believer in fate. Or the time I lit the drapes on fire and almost burned the house down. His notion of fate was dropping me off at juvie and letting some other sucker adopt me. When they arrest you, they put your wrist in handcuff. Feels like glass cutting into your skin. Feels like chains, and you feel like a slave or the very criminal you were meant to be. Ha. So maybe that is fate. Across the lake, the old man came out of the house around the time we were nearly finished. Barry took off, dust vapors rising up where he had been. I watched the old guy sight me with his rifle, heard him yell, "One more time, go ahead, I ain't afraid to shoot." It felt like someone had given me a belated birthday present. I loaded the launcher, pulled the makeshift trigger, puffed out my chest, and waited. Thank you.